So, Joe, I was wondering back there, I'm not prepared for this, but if you would look up on the internet a map of the Sea of Galilee, and specifically the North Shore, it'd be Capernaum. I'll use that in my presentation this morning. John chapter 6 and verse 1. After these things, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee or Tiberias, and a large crowd followed him because they saw the signs which he was performing on those who were sick. So let me set the scene for you here. Jesus was born in the region of Galilee, which was the northern part of the nation of Israel. It was kind of the backwoods, you might say, the Hicksville of Long Island. I know Dan lives there in Hicksville, but I think we might, just because of the name, think of Galilee in that way. But Jesus was not only born and raised in Galilee, but in its Hicksville, it would be Nazareth. So there wasn't many people in Nazareth. Maybe there was 200 or 300 during Jesus' lifetime. And finally, when he went public in his ministry, he moved from Nazareth, about 20 miles east, right on the shore, the western shore of the Sea of Galilee, to the capital city called Capernaum. And that's where his headquarters was for 3.5 years of ministry. In fact, it not only was in the city of Capernaum, it was in a house. And as you read the Gospels, you hear about this house over and over. It was Peter's house. So Jesus, by and large, ministered in Galilee out of the city of Capernaum. And of course, whenever he would gather publicly to teach, he would draw large crowds. Now you could imagine why. If we had someone on Long Island who was moving around the island and healing people, cleaning out the hospitals, the children's wards, the adult wards, healing people of sickness and lameness and blindness, even raising the dead, you would just imagine when there would be a sighting of him, word of him, Twitter would be on fire in Long Island, and people would drive from all places to get to that one place and flock to him so that he could heal their loved ones, so they could see these miracles that he was doing. Well, that's the scene as we come to John chapter 6. A large crowd followed him in verse 2 because of the signs or the miracles that he was performing. Now, if you understand the press of the crowd, and that little word might be familiar to you, it's often used in the Gospels. These crowds would so press against Jesus that there would be nowhere for him to go. And very often he would back up to the shore of the Sea of Galilee, and they would press on him and press on him, and the only place left for him to go would be in a boat. And he would get inside of a boat. Peter's fishing boats were there. John and his family's fishing boats were there. And he would go out several yards, and then he would teach the people. It was a good place for carrying sound. If you've ever been out on a lake, it just carries right throughout the entire lake. So as we come to our story, Jesus is in Capernaum. Crowds have come from everywhere. They brought their sick family and friends, and they have pressed upon him so much so that now he is in a boat and he is teaching after healing many, many people. Well, verse 1, after these things, what we just talked about, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee or Tiberias. To the Jews, it was the Sea of Galilee. To the Romans, it was the Sea of Tiberias. John, writing to both Jews and Romans, uses both names so that both understand what lake or what sea. You could see it right there that we're talking about. By the way, it's about 13 miles up and down, north and south, the Sea of Galilee. A river enters in. On the bottom side, it comes out as the Jordan River, goes all the way down to Jerusalem, empties into the Dead Sea, just to give you a little bit of geography. Capernaum, if you could see it there, is about 11 o'clock. That would be the capital city. As I said, Jesus was born and raised in Nazareth. He was born in Bethlehem, about 20 miles west of that. So Jesus gets in a boat and they begin to sail eastward from 11 o'clock. And I'm going to have to look here just to see if we have it. Bethsaida. So it's about a 5-mile walk, if you will. And Jesus and his disciples get in a boat, and maybe they're about 40, 50 yards offshore, and they begin to sail. Well, the crowds can't get enough of Jesus. There are still more people to be healed. There are still more miracles to see. So as Jesus and the disciples begin to sail, the crowds begin to follow along the shoreline. Verse 3, Jesus went, verse 2, a large crowd followed him. So he's in a boat. He's sailing, the crowd follows. And all along that shore, by the way, there's little villages. And as the crowd moves through the village, they're picking up more and more people. By the time they arrive to where Jesus and the disciples are, you know the story, they have about 20 or 25,000 people. That is a lot of people. Well, the boat arrives before the crowd. There's a lot of up and down hills in the area. It's a bit of a mountainous walk. Verse 3, Jesus, when he arrived, went up on a mountain. I think better to read that as a hill, kind of a high hill. They're known there. In Bethsaida, it's where the river comes down, so there would be hills around the river. And there he sat down with his disciples. Now, when you put all the Gospels together, they're looking for a bit of rest and relaxation. It has been a hard couple of weeks. They have made their way through the region of Galilee. Matthew says going to every town and every village, teaching and healing all that were sick. Luke writes in Acts chapter 10 and verse 38, all that were sick in the region of Galilee were healed by Jesus. And all may not mean all there, but it just seemed like all. So they're looking for a little bit of rest and relaxation. They're on a hill. Verse 4. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was near. Therefore Jesus, lifting up his eyes and seeing that the large crowd was now coming to him. So they're on this hillside. They have been resting a bit. And now they look, and up the hill comes a crowd. But not just a crowd. It is a large crowd. And they've been walking for 5 miles. It's not been an easy walk. So we're talking a couple of hours here with ancient sandals. There's no real pathway. They're walking along the shore up and down. So maybe they've been walking for 2 and 3 hours. And now here they come. They're coming up on the hillside where Jesus is. Rest and relaxation is about to be over. They've been walking a long way. And Philip, or Jesus lifting up his eyes, you remember it's Andrew and Philip who come to Jesus, and they ask about feeding the crowd. You put the Gospels together, and Jesus said to Philip, okay, where are we to buy bread so that these might eat? Well, as you might guess, there's no ShopRite, no Stop and Shop, none of these grocery stores. Now, there are some farmers and there are some fields, and when you walked in ancient times along the pathway of the fields, you were allowed to take a bit of wheat and a bit of corn and to kind of, the term they use in the Old Testament is to glean a bit. But this crowd really hasn't even thought about that. They've been following a boat. They've been laser focused on Jesus. Now they got him on a hill. They don't want him to get away, so they begin to make their way up that hill. Some of the disciples come to Jesus. They're tired. It's a bit later in the day. If you put all the gospel accounts together, Jesus now has been teaching the crowd. So a few more hours have gone by, and now they're getting hungry. And it's getting late. And if anything, in ancient times, you didn't stay out past dark because there were no lights. And you may get some moonlight, but the walk back's going to be a bit treacherous, and moonlight's not enough. So they needed to hurry to get back, but there would be no stores on the way back, no restaurants. And the disciples are concerned that the people were going to get some food to gain some strength to make it back. So Jesus says, okay, where are you going to buy some food? Now he was saying this to test him, for he himself knew what he was intending to do. Of course he knew, because he was Jesus and he had thought it all through. He understood where they were at. And Philip said, well, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient, even for everyone to receive a little. So we do have some money, But that's not enough. But even if they had enough, there was no place to buy food to feed the people. So one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There's a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are these for so many?" So someone was thinking in the story, but it's not someone who's actually in the story. It was a mom who lives back in Capernaum. And her son, maybe he was 12 years old, he was going to follow Jesus that day. And she said to her son, "Why don't you at least pack a lunch?" And she gives him what would be 5 little biscuits. Maybe the kind of biscuits we would make when my wife makes strawberry shortcake. And inside of those biscuits, she had chopped up a couple of little fish, mixed it with a little bit of relish, mayonnaise, maybe we would say in our day, so that he would be able to spread on the biscuits and he would be able to have lunch. It was enough for a 12 to 14-year-old boy who might be gone much of the day. By the way, you see his willingness to offer this food to Jesus. Great example for us. So the disciples come to Jesus with these 5 little biscuits and these 2 little fish. And Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." Wonder what he's going to do. Is he going to have them sit down so he can make an announcement? "You've walked all the way out here and it's getting late and there's no food and you need to hurry and get back right now." Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in a number of about 5,000. Very often in these type of settings, the men would sit together, kind of like when I grew up with my relatives, all right? All the men would be in the basement, they'd be playing poker, whatever the case might be. The ladies would be upstairs, they would be talking. So the men sit together, there's about 5,000. We would assume that their wives were there. We would assume that they brought their children. So maybe you're talking 20,000, maybe top end 25,000 people. Think about if you've ever been to a place where there's 25,000 people. We're talking a lot of people. Maybe a concert, an outdoor concert, maybe a baseball game. 25,000 people. They have walked for several hours. They have been taught for a few more hours. It's getting late. They're hungry. We have a few biscuits. We have a few fish. Jesus then, verse 11, took the loaves, and having given thanks, he thanks his Father, he began to distribute to those who were seated, likewise also of the fish, as much as they wanted. When you put all the gospel accounts together, there are baskets that the disciples have with them. They all kind of brought their own backpacks in the form of baskets in the boat. There'd be several uses for those baskets if you were a fisherman, so they always had them in the boat. And Jesus begins to take out of one basket, distribute to other baskets, and they begin to make their way through the group who, by the way, are seated in certain patterns. If you're able to count 5,000, they're probably seated in groups or in rows that make it somewhat easy to count. So the disciples make their way through about 25,000 people. Everyone takes a basket. Everyone reaches in. Everyone takes as much as they possibly want. And it gets to the next row and there's still more in the basket. You say, how much was there? Well, there was enough, verse 12 says, that everybody was filled. In other words, everybody was hungry. And everybody took as much as they wanted, so much so that they were all filled and they couldn't eat any more. Think about how that is for you. Maybe you missed breakfast, you skimped a little bit on lunch, and now dinner. And you've come home and you just can't wait. And if you're like me, you probably put more on the plate than you really should and that you really wanted. But your eyes are big and you're hungry. Well, that's where we're at with this group. They take as much as they can and more, and they eat all that they can, and now they are filled. They must have exhausted all the food, right? Well, Jesus said to the 12, "Gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing will be lost." So they gathered them up. They filled the 12 baskets with fragments of 5 barley loaves that were left over of those who had eaten. Therefore, when the people saw the sign, that means this was a miracle. which he had performed, they said, "Truly, this is the prophet," which Vinny read about in Acts, "the one Moses spoke about in Deuteronomy 18 that would be the Messiah. He would be sent by God, he would speak for God, and he would demonstrate the power of God. And now the people say, this must be him." Now, why would they say that? We have to think about this miracle. This is one of the most incredible miracles in all of Scripture. By the way, it is the only miracle outside of the resurrection that's recorded in all four Gospels. In other words, each of the Gospel writers, as they begin to calculate what stories and what miracles should we put in our Gospel, because space is limited, each one of them came to their own conclusion, this one we'll put in. Why was this such an incredible miracle? Because I might think to myself, well, healing a blind man is more incredible, or someone that was lame, or raising someone from the dead. But you have to think about this miracle. Where does bread come from? Well, it comes from wheat. Where does wheat come from? It comes from the ground. And how does wheat come out of the ground? It comes through seeds. And where did that seed come from? It comes from other wheat plants that came from the ground, that came from other seeds. And it all goes back to the garden, by the way. Jesus created bread, and he skipped the entire process of how bread has been made in our world since the very beginning of creation. There were no seeds, there was no wheat. There was no ground that he used. There was no previous wheat and previous seeds. He just created bread. Just like that. And he did the same thing with fish, by the way. Where do fish come from? They come from the water. And they come from mommy fish and daddy fish that came from the water, that came from mommy fish and daddy fish. And Jesus skipped all of that. And he just created fish. By the way, the prologue of John's Gospel, chapter 1 through 18, tells us everything John's going to tell us in his Gospel. So he begins in chapter 1 and verse 1, "In the beginning was the Word." In other words, Jesus is the explanation of God, because the Word was God and because the Word was with God. So John says, "I'm going to tell you in this Gospel, I'm going to prove to you that Jesus is God." How are you going to prove it, John? Chapter 1 and verse 3, "All things were created by him, and without him was not anything made that was made." So you go ahead and read the Gospel of John. Story after story after story after story is Jesus proving himself to be God by creating. So he creates bread, and he creates fish out of nothing. Does that remind you of something, by the way? God created a universe out of nothing. In other words, in this simple story of Jesus feeding 25,000 people, starting with nothing and feeding them to their field, it reminds us that that's what the Creator did. Jesus is the Creator. But that's not the only miracle he did on this day. There's another miracle. Verse 15, "So Jesus, perceiving that they were intending to come and take him by force and make him king." Now listen, if you lived in that day and you understood how hard food was to come by, and you labored in your farm every single day, and you prayed for rain, and you prayed that enemies didn't come and steal your food, if you found someone to give you free food, you'd be willing to make him king. Listen, now that I think about it, people have been promising free food and getting elected for a long time, right? So they were willing to make Jesus king right there. I mean, he's going to give them free food. But he didn't come to create an earthly kingdom right then and there. So the Bible says he withdrew himself from the mountain. Evening was come, verse 16, and the disciples went down to the sea. And after getting in a boat, they started across the sea to Capernaum. So they get in the boat in Bethsaida, and they begin to sail out maybe 50 yards, 100 yards, and they're going to go back to Capernaum. That's headquarters. The people are filled. It's still light a bit. They're going to be able to walk back now. The disciples are going to begin to sail back. It had already become dark, verse 17, and Jesus had not yet come to them. So they begin to sail on their own, but this isn't a problem. They've been doing this all their lives. By and large, they're all fishermen. They've all been in boats. They all know how to handle the sea. But this time, the sea began to be stirred up because a strong wind was blowing. Now, you can't really see the topography there, but the Sea of Galilee is one of the lowest points on all of the earth when it comes to sea level. It is literally in the bottom of a deep bowl. And all around it are hills, and the highest of hills are on the east end, and you can't see it, but 60 miles east is the Mediterranean Sea, a rather large sea. And every once in a while, a storm would blow across the Mediterranean Sea, and it would just pick up steam across that very warm sea. And then it would get to the eastern end, and it would start to blow that 60 miles on the mountains. And it would begin to cool as it blew along the mountains. And then it would hit the Sea of Galilee, that very low bowl, which was very, very hot. And as the storm would come going east along the mountains and it would hit the Sea of Galilee, it would immediately drop into the sea. The cold air would hit the warm air and a violent storm would break out. No weathermen to warn you back then. Not that they would have been right anyway. But it would come unsuspecting. And that's what happened on this night. A storm just hit. And it was violent. You could go on YouTube and look it up now. In that Sea of Galilee, when these violent storms hit, the waves could get 10 feet high. And they pretty much were in a 12-person rowboat, if that's the best way I could describe it. So the sea began to stir up because of a strong wind, and it was blowing. And then when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, now they rowed 3 or 4 miles, but they really got nowhere but out to the middle of the sea, and we'll see that. So they're fighting with all of their mights against the storm. They're trying to get back to Capernaum, but the storm is blowing them out to sea. If you read all the Gospels, they are frightened for their lives. They don't know that they're going to make it. And they saw Jesus in the middle of this. He was coming out in a motorboat to rescue them. He was walking on the sea. And he drew near to the boat and they were frightened. They didn't yet know it was Jesus. They thought it was some ghost, some spirit. You'd be frightened too, by the way, right? If you're out in the middle of the sea and all of a sudden here comes some sort of spirit person you don't know. It's dark, it's windy, but it's coming your direction. But he got to the boat and he said, "It is I." I love that. Do not be afraid. You know, we get to those points in our life too, right? The storm starts to blow. It may be financial issues, health issues, career issues, family issues. And Jesus is right there. It's I. Don't be afraid. At that point, verse 21, they were willing to receive him into the boat. And immediately, now you have to put all the Gospels together, Jesus stood up and he gave one Greek word. In English, it's hush, hush, hush. And immediately, the boat was at the land where they were going. There weren't two miracles that evening. There was three. There was feeding 25,000 people out of nothing. There was stopping a massive storm in the middle of the lake with a word. And then there was immediately conquering time and space, moving from the middle of the Sea of Galilee right to the shore of Capernaum. Jesus controls nature. He creates bread and fish. Jesus controls the weather. And Jesus controls time and space. Let me put it another way. Jesus is God Almighty. Jesus is the creator of all things. Jesus is who he claimed to be. I think if there's any comical part in this story, by the way, and you have to read the other Gospels, Matthew 14, the disciples were afraid of the storm outside their boat. When Jesus gets inside the boat, Matthew says, we are actually more afraid. In other words, better to be afraid of God inside your boat than the storm outside your boat, right? You get that close to God, the perfect, holy Son of God, and you are still in your sin. That can be a frightening, frightening experience. You're here today, and maybe you never considered Jesus this deeply. I mean, you always heard he was God. You went to church somewhere and they told you he was God. But you see it on the pages of Scripture, that he demonstrates this incredible power. He creates out of nothing. He controls nature. He conquers time and space. And yet he's compassionate enough to take a little boy's lunch and feed a crowd of 25,000. A crowd that would by and large reject him, by the way, in a few months. Jesus is who he claimed to be. He's who John said he is. He is the creator of all things. And this creator, by the time you get to the end of John's gospel, is going to go to the cross, and he's going to die for sinners like you and sinners like me. That's who this Jesus is. The same Jesus who saved Samuel and Marcia can save you as well. If you're here this morning, you've never been born again. And the same Jesus who cared for and provided for his disciples will care for and provide for you as well as you walk with him through this life. So let's bow for prayer. Father,